I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee to order on February 21st, 2023. There is a quorum present. We'll move with the approval of minutes for February 16, 2023. Representative Tapke, do I have a motion?
Is this what I get for making eye contact?
Yeah.
So moved.
Okay. Representative Tapke moves the approval of the minutes for February 16, 2023. Any discussion? Seeing none, on those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 16, 2023 are approved. All right. The first item of the agenda is from the Minnesota Board of Animal Health on Farm Survey Day Program. Do we have Dr. Courtney Wheeler here to testify? I see someone standing up. Will you be doing the presentation?
Yes, I will.
Okay, if you can please proceed and identify yourself before the committee.
Thank you, Chair and members. Dr. Eric Jopp, Assistant Director with the Board of Animal Health, filling in for Dr. Courtney Wheeler today, who is unable to be here. I believe she may be on a Zoom for questions if need be. I'll talk some today about the farm survey of how the Board of Animal Health has been working with those producers. So, Minnesota law requires that any person who owns farm survey register with the Board of Animal Health and comply with all requirements of the board's farm survey program. These requirements are intended to help stop the introduction and spread of chronic wasting disease. In fiscal year 2022, 227 Minnesotans possessed farm survey. The number of registered herds in the state has continuously declined since the program's inception. Of the 227 herds currently registered, the majority consists of white-tailed deer and elk. The majority of herd owners reported that they engage in interstate commerce, producing animals for breeding or hunting, or for the production and sale of animal products. Herd owners must identify every animal in their herd with a unique ear tag approved by the board. The individual tagged animals must be reported at least once per year when the herd manager completes an inventory of all animals in the herd. If an animal is moved into or out of a herd, the identification number of that animal, the animal's origin and destination, and the date moved must be reported. To prevent the introduction of CWD through movements of farmed animals, we regulate all farmed cervidae moving within the state or entering the state. Live cervidae or cervidae carcasses may not be imported into Minnesota or moved within Minnesota from a herd that is infected with or exposed to CWD. Before an animal may be imported, the importer must obtain a permit which verifies that the importer is registered with the board's farm cervidae program and meets all requirements under law for possessing farm cervidae. Animals imported must be seen by a veterinarian prior to movement and must originate from a herd that has achieved the highest level for CWD surveillance status through a state-approved herd certification program. For any farm survey moved into or out of a Minnesota herd, the herd owner must submit a movement report to the board within 14 days of movement. Minnesota is a net exporter of farm survey. In 2022, 106 domestic cervids were imported into the state and 780 animals were exported. The Board of Animal Health has been working with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to prepare their staff to conduct inspections of all Minnesota registered white-tailed deer farms. Inspections include verification that all perimeter fences on the farm measure at least 96 inches in height and are constructed in a way that prevents the introduction of wild cervidae and escape of and escape of farm survey. Inspectors also verify that entrances used to access animal enclosures have redundant gating and that all animals are officially identified as required by law. Inspector review inventories with the farmer and verify them against movement and death reports to ensure that all animals are accounted for. Any official identified animal in the herd that dies or is slaughtered must be reported to the board, and if 12 months of age or older, the animal must be tested for CWD. Each fiscal year, more than 20% of the farm survey have been tested for CWD. After two decades of CWD surveillance in farm survey, 13 herds have been identified as CWD positive. All 13 herds were depopulated, and all animals in the herd were tested for CWD. Out of more than 1,500 animals depopulated and tested, 54 tested positive for CWD. So CWD was not detected in over 1,400 animals. The most recent detection of CWD in a farm surveyed herd was in August of 2022. In that herd, the remaining 120 animals in the herd at depopulation in October of 2022, all 120 of those animals tested CWD not detected. One of the primary goals of the Board of Animal Health, USDA APHIS, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, in conjunction with many other state and federal partners, is to determine how to stop the spread of CWD. USDA APHIS Veterinary Services implemented a voluntary herd certification program which requires farmers to conduct surveillance for CWD. Only 28 states participate in this program, and as a result of this surveillance, CWD has been confirmed in farmed animals in 18 states. 29 states have confirmed CWD in wild cervids, primarily conducting surveillance in free-ranging cervid populations surrounding farms where CWD has been identified. USDA and APHIS has made cooperative agreement funding available to all state agencies and partners to engage in research and activities that control and prevent CWD. This funding can be utilized for the development or implementation of CWD surveillance, CWD testing, management, and response activities. Funds have also been made available for the indemnification and removal of CWD-affected farm cervid herds and CWD-exposed cervids. Minnesota Board of Animal Health applied for funding and received grants for indemnification and removal of the CWD-affected herd in Winona County and to support multiple research projects, including research conducted by the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine to identify farm and environmental risk factors associated with CWD introduction to cervid herds. Analyzing samples from Minnesota's farmed white-tailed deer to identify genetic markers that are considered less susceptible to CWD, as well as the development of an online producer portal which will allow farmers to submit inventories, movement documents, death reports, and CWD results to the board in real time. Dr. Scott Wells and his university team utilized results from their ongoing research to develop resources for cervid farmers to better understand their operations' risk of becoming infected with CWD and to help them develop a biosecurity plan to reduce the risk of CWD entering their farm. Thanks to his research, farmers can work with Dr. Wells and their veterinarian to complete a biosecurity assessment which evaluates information about their farm and provides a framework to evaluate and prioritize risks of introduction of CWD through potential transmission pathways. Farmers can use this assessment to create or improve their farm's biosecurity plan and implement changes that mitigate the risk of CWD introduction. The Board of Animal Health is also utilizing cooperative agreement funding to work with farmers to test their white-tailed deer for genetic markers that allow researchers to distinguish animals highly susceptible to CWD. These samples are submitted to the North American Deer Registry, a nonprofit organization that houses genetic information for deer breeders across North America. The North American Deer Registry has partnered with Dr. Christopher Seabury, Associate Professor at Texas A&M University College of Veterinary Medicine, to conduct research identifying genetic markers looking for CWD resistance in deer. After samples are analyzed, Minnesota farmers are provided with a report for each animal that identifies five genetic markers associated with the prion gene in a genomically estimated breeding value, which compares them to CWD positive and negative deer across the nation. Animals with certain genotypes and a negative breeding value are considered to be less susceptible to CWD. The hope is that that continued analysis will enable farmers to effectively categorize animals as being minimally susceptible, moderately susceptible, or highly susceptible to CWD. Farmers can then utilize this information to make management decisions that may eventually help to breed the disease out of existence or at least significantly reduce its presence. Registered cervid farmers are required to share information about all of the animals in their herd with regulatory agencies. This includes submission of an accurate inventory to the Board of Animal Health and notification of animal births, deaths, and movements. Currently, producers submit this type of documentation to the board through the mail, email, or other assigned or their assigned inspectors. To streamline this process and receive more accurate information that can be verified in real time, the board is using cooperative agreement funding to develop an online portal which farmers can use in the field. This will greatly reduce the amount of time state staff spend sorting and reconciling information and increase the accuracy of animal inventories. And with that, I thank you and open up for any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Eric, for your presentation. Any questions from the committee? Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. My question is, if a farm has CWD and the herd is depopulated, what is the effect on the land? Is there any effect on the land that the animals are on?
There is a lot of research going into that. There may be some of those prions in the soil. And if a farm is depopulated because of CWD, the fencing and structure and gates and everything have to be kept intact for a minimum of 5 years.
Representative Harder. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, we had testimony previously this year about the prion lasting for 15 years, and the rules only provide for 5 years. But my question is related to if there is self-reporting or inspection, how did the Beltrami farm happen? I mean, how do we have deer dying and then getting dumped on public land and then the state of Minnesota having to clean up the mess and build fences to keep deer out? I guess first question, has the public been reimbursed for the fence cost to exclude the deer from the area where the deer farmer dumped the deer on public land?
Dr. Eric?
I believe that is still in the court system and has not been finalized at this point.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, how long ago did this happen?
Dr. Eric.
I do not have those dates on the top of my head.
Representative Hansen.
Really have nothing more to add. I think we've discussed this for many years. I think there's a failure. I think that co-management's been a failure, and we need to do some significant reform.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, in your opinion, if you can give us an opinion, if all of the deer farms in Minnesota were eliminated, would that take away CWD in the wild herd in Minnesota?
Dr. Eric?
In my opinion, no, I believe it would not, because it has been established it is in the wild herd and circulating in the wild herd in certain parts of the state. And in my opinion, taking cervid farms away does not address that issue.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would it reduce the risk, or are we looking at this possible solution as not being a real solution? What degree would it impact CWD?
Dr. Eric?
Again, in my opinion, the farm service program is probably under the most stringent regulations of any industry. Every animal is identified at birth or shortly thereafter, monitored throughout their entire life, and when they're either die or are slaughtered, are tested for CWD. So we have a very good handle on how much or if any CWD is occurring in these farmed animals.
Representative Anderson?
Just a follow-up question. You mentioned the genome testing, and I had visited with a deer farmer, and he was talking about a breeder from Wisconsin that has been really working on this in this area for a number of years. And he's really reduced the, either it's a genome or a chromosome that would predict a CWD, and he's made a lot of progress in his herd. Is that an isolated case, or can that be done on more of a widespread basis?
Dr. Eric?
That research that is being done there is a different researcher than the one I mentioned, but there is potential of that genetic susceptibility, if you would, being bred out of animals, so that that researcher and Dr. Seabury, who I mentioned earlier, are somewhat collaborating their research to find out if there is a genomically more resistant type of an animal. So I would say it's probably not an isolated case, but that is one of the research studies that is being conducted.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I see the decline of farms from 2013 to 2022. What are the contribution to the decline of these farms?
Dr. Eric?
Again, this would be just a speculation, but I some of it is the regulations that are put on them in order to comply to all the rules. It does take a significant amount of paperwork and time. And some of them have just chosen to no longer continue.
Representative Cha?
And a question to you. Do we need these farms?
Dr. Eric?
In my opinion, they are a legal farm that operates just like any other farm of commerce within the state. They are, like, as I said, they are regulated more than any other entity that we have.
Representative Cha?
No further questions. Thank you.
Okay. I have a question. Does the Board of Animal Health think that double fencing should be an additional security biosecurity measure for to address the containment of CWD?
It could be looked at in a couple different ways. As far as the board is concerned, double fencing may aid in that, but that's just one part of a biosecurity plan, as I've mentioned already. So it may help. But will it mitigate it and decrease that? I have reservations if it would actually accomplish what it's looking to do.
Okay. Representative Purcell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to state for the record, one of the researchers that was quoted here today and in the Environment Committee is Dr. Samantha Wells at the University of Minnesota. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Burkle?
Thank you, Madam Chair. could you just kind of compare to me that Representative Anson brought up the genetic component of this and comparing it to sheep and scrapie? We talked about that some in the Environment Committee. And we find scrapie in sheep, and that seems to have been bred out of them or whatever you want to call it. Could that be, I mean, you mentioned that in your testimony, but how we handle sheep in the past, is that something we did in the past, you know, as far as prions in the ground, where sheep were positive for scrapie back X years ago? How did we handle that back in the past?
Dr. Eric?
To my recollection, scrapie and sheep, it is a similar disease. I believe those animals were just depopulated, and the ground, I don't think, had any regulations on what could be going onto those, onto that ground after a positive was there.
Representative Burkle?
Nothing further, thanks.
Okay. Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important to recognize with white-tailed deer, we're dealing with inside the fence, something that was classified as livestock relatively recently, but we have a wild animal outside the fence. We don't have wild sheep running around. We have a huge industry of hunting. We have impacts of deer on forestry and the ecosystem. So equating deer with sheep, I think the evidence has been at some of the deer farms, you have a trail outside the fence because the wild deer come and walk back and forth along that fence. There's contact with the deer. The question really isn't would we stop CWD without deer farms, but would we impact the spread? And when we look at the map, kind of where these are, they seem to have a location around deer farms, which are spread into the wild. So we have spent a huge amount of public money on the wild side because those deer belong to the public. And for years now, in front of this committee and others, we've had really a reluctance to change anything, and we just hear we're really regulated hard. You know, we actually had to fund from my committee into the Board of Animal Health to help pay for the regulation several years ago because the industry does not pay for regulating, for its own regulation. It takes money to actually do these inspections. So here we have something that has a great impact potentially, and it's spreading around the state, and there's things that we could do, but there's a reluctance to do them. And you know, we've waited a long time dealing with this, spending public money, often hunters' money, to respond to this. So there's things we'll be hearing later today that I think can be done that can resolve this. I'm concerned that, you know, we can't even get the state veterinarian or the executive director here to testify on these major issues of the day. I respect your professional opinion, but we also have significant research that's been done that shows that these things, the prions last forever, could last forever. They last for 15 years. That's a long time. So what happens to the site? Say you reduce the susceptibility, even if that was possible, it's 100% fatal. So you have the deer shedding prions, even if they're susceptible or not, into the ground. And we have the research that shows that the plants that come up from that ground carry the prion, and then something else can eat them. So I hope we move forward with at least taking some action finally related to these issues, because we've had a lot of cliches and anecdotes for many years on this, and it's time to move.
All right, any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, since this is the Ag Committee, Representative Chaw asked a question about, are these farmers valuable? I think it's kind of what he was needed or whatever. And if there are 227 of them, or at least that's the number of herds that we have, and our committee has spent a lot of time discussing the value of smaller ag operations, and this is a perfect example of a smaller ag operation. It's not thousands of acres, it's maybe 100 acres or whatever, but it's small agriculture, and in many areas we encourage that in this committee and in this state. So it seems that we aren't being consistent in support of small agriculture, which these deer farms certainly are, And I just think to, you know, not put them out of business, but say you can't sell your farm or whatever, in effect, that will do that over time. That I just think it's a part of our agricultural scene that we should be showing more consideration to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Taffy.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I just wanted to draw attention to page 3 of Representative Anderson, to your comments there. Is that as we're looking at incentivizing pushing and moving forward with a lot more small farmers in the state of Minnesota, to me that means ag around food production and that type of thing. And that's the majority of where farming, in my opinion, as we go to small farmers is. But if you look in that second herd usage table on there, that the vast majority of the 227 that are currently in the herd usage, the vast majority of those are for exhibition and for breeding and for hobbyist farms. And like there's a lot of the hobbyist farm side of things, but the breeding exhibition, hunting preserve, trophy hunting, animal sales, those kinds of things. And then urine production goes in the same vein is not necessarily like the meat production type of things. And so the hunting and those where they have enclosed spaces to just go out and hunt a trophy buck and things like that. To me, that doesn't, I just wanted to say, I don't think that that falls under the same category to me as small farmers do, where we're trying to incentivize food production for local economies and different things like that. And so I think that there are two very different things here. If we were talking about farm survey simply for meat production and for food and for other byproducts that come from that, that would be one thing. But for hunting and the great danger, in my opinion, that farm survey posed to the wild population of deer, I think is a whole different, sends it in a whole different echelon of importance of things we need to talk about and regulate and figure out what the best way forward is. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Chaw.
Yeah, I just want to remark that to add to what Representative Tapke said, is that we already spend a lot of money in the DNR programs, right, to establish these hunting programs for this type of trophy hunting and, I guess, sportsmanship. So that's why I'm just saying it's some overlapping, I guess, that we're spending more money on these farms that may be a threat to our, you know, public population of cervids. That's all. Thank you.
Great. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment to Representative Tapke. I guess there's different ways of defining agriculture. I think of hemp. We're encouraging hemp production, and I don't think people eat hemp. There are a lot of successful beef cattle operations where their main source of income is selling breeding stock, not necessarily to make hamburger every day. So I think to narrow the scope down to say if you don't produce some kind of food, you're not really agriculture, I guess I don't quite agree with that.
All right. Members, I would just know that these bills that we're hearing today, they're not new bills. We've heard them in previous sessions before, and CWD has been an ongoing issue that we've been hearing. So just to wrap things up, thank you, Dr. Eric, for your presentation and for being here. We appreciate your presence. And with that, we'll go ahead with the bills of today. Our first bill is House File 911. Representative Hansen on the Board of Animal Health. Please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the House File 911 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
To your bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I don't know how many members are familiar with the term of regulatory capture, but it's an economic theory that a regulatory body becomes captured by those that it is supposed to be regulating and does the interests of those that it is regulating. I believe the Minnesota Board of Animal Health is a case study in regulatory capture. I think that our world has changed a lot over the decades. And when I grew up on a farm, you often had veterinarians that made the rounds. You had independent small family farms that would go that everybody knew their veterinarian, lived in the community. You didn't have a lot of small animal veterinarians. You didn't have a lot of companion animals. Since that time, we have fewer, as I get older, there are fewer and fewer small family farms. There are fewer and fewer multitasking veterinarians. The Board of Animal Health is tasked with responsibilities more than just making sure that there are good veterinarians out there. It has to deal with major disease outbreaks, some of which could jump to the human population. And I will say it has done a good job with bovine TB up in northwestern Minnesota and high path avian influenza several years ago. But it is time to update the Board of Animal Health and make it more reflective of Minnesota and serve Minnesota, that it would serve the Minnesota public, not just the regulated parties. And so having geographic and population responsibilities, my bill proposes having two at-large members, one of which is from a federally recognized tribe, and eight regional members with no two residing in the same congressional district. In addition, the appointments, they'd still be by the governor, should try to achieve gender balance among the membership, and that members must be knowledgeable in animal agriculture, animal health, or pets and companion animals with at least two members to represent the public and are not employed in agriculture, veterinary medicine, the pet industry, or a related field. Now, I know you're going to hear, you know, folks want everybody to be either a veterinarian or a producer. I think it would actually strengthen the board if there are members from the public, the general public, who could advocate as a member of the board on what the Board of Animal Health is doing. I would also take the responsibility of the chief veterinarian from the board and have the governor appoint that. So there would be a line responsibility through the executive branch for that member. And that is the bill.
All right, I see that we have amendments, so we'll start with amendments before we move on to testimony. I see the A1, Representative Anderson, are you offering that amendment? Please move your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an amendment that, again, puts it back the way it was. And we've talked with Representative Hansen over the years, and he likes to move ahead with change, and I like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And what this amendment does, Madam Chair, is just simply keep the purview of appointing the executive director in the hands of the members of the Board of Animal Health. And I would ask for a green vote, positive vote.
All right. Discussion? Representative Anderson? Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would oppose the A1 amendment. I think Representative Anderson and I disagree. He feels it ain't broke and don't fix it. I feel it's broke and we need to fix it. There may be some way to look at that in between. I know some have suggested maybe having the Commissioner of Ag be the responsible for the appointment. There are others who have wanted the Board of Animal Health to be under the Department of Agriculture. So this bill is being laid over. I'm happy to continue the discussion, Representative Anderson, but right now I'd ask for the A1 to be voted down.
Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
Nay.
Nay. The nays have it and the motion does not prevail. The next amendment we have is the A3. Representative Burkle, would you please move your amendment?
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Hansen, in the spirit of cooperation, rather than keep things, as much as I agree with Representative Anderson that things need to stay the same, I looked at your bill and I said, what can we do to make it better? And So in the spirit of that, I took, if you go to page 1, line 10, and delete your new language, and what I considered offering was the 11 members you're considering, but 6 must be producers of livestock. 3 should be practicing veterinarians who work primarily with large animals, as you can read. And then the thought of having a small animal vet, companion animals, and then a member of the public to get to round that out to the 11, including the Native American aspect in that as well. The other thing is if you go to the bottom of that amendment, under subdivision 3, livestock producer board members, I want to make sure that it's clear that a producer of livestock is someone who's actually growing livestock. So what we did is looked at the cottage food bill we passed a couple years back when we raised the threshold, and I have that here somewhere. The threshold from 18,000 to 78,000. Just some context to actually consider someone actual producer rather than just one goat in the backyard. So that's kind of the amendment. I think it takes what you're trying to do, the change you're looking for, and with some reasonable conversation, maybe we can come up with a way to make this workable. Although, as Representative Anderson said, I fail to see how it's broke now. So this is kind of what I'm hoping kind of a compromise solution, something we look at. But I really think, given the circumstances in the poultry industry as we move into the spring and the issues with avian flu and African swine fever facing us, it's a daunting task that the Board of Animal Health has. And I think it's a poor time, and it's frankly irresponsible to change things right now. But this amendment, I think, is something we can work off of, and maybe, and since we're laying the bell over, it's a conversation we can have. But I'd look for a green vote on that. I'd like a roll call, Madam Chair.
A roll call being requested. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would ask for a no vote on the A3 amendment. I appreciate, Representative Burkle, your movement on this. I think, you know, we should realize that there's other legislation out there as well, companion animal board proposal that's been around for many years. I think, having balance is really important. And I understand with the livestock industry, I would also note, you know, there's never going to be a good time when we're in session from January to May, because spring is always probably going to now bring the specter of avian flu. It's probably with us. So the potential is always there. There's always going to be a disease, and that's why I'm asking for a broader spectrum of the board so that we can have that resiliency on the board of dealing with things. I'm frankly really concerned about companion animals and animals that are in close proximity with people and the veterinarians that work with them to have that voice at the table, because I don't want something that moves through dogs and cats that's going to be a much harder thing to deal with if that occurred. And so on the livestock producer, I know there was some heartburn previously when a member of the board had been a livestock producer but no longer had a lot of cows. I think experience is important. I think you could have people who are retired. You could have people who maybe were an animal science professor at the U that has experience and is not producing livestock. So I think there's things we can work on here. I appreciate your effort. I would ask for a no vote at this time.
Any further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as much as I hate change, I have to support Representative Burkle's amendment. The Board of Animal Health deals with some really important things. And you yourself, Representative Hansen, said they did a good job, great job with avian influenza. And that's, our state is number one in the country in turkey production, and it's a big issue. And some say that 11 people on a board of directors or a board is cumbersome as far as making quick decisions. I think with the diseases facing our production agriculture folks, the board has been quick to react and to come up with policies at work, and I just hate to see that disrupted and moved to a board that's twice as large, whatever, but that may be what's going to happen. But again, they've done a really good job on the situations pertaining to our poultry, and thinking about African swine fever in our hog industry, again, extremely important, and the board does an important job, and I would support Representative Burkle's amendment here, the A3, Madam Chair.
All right. We have Representative Luke Federer, and then we'll move on to voting on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. Under the current language of the bill, where there's a requirement of representative from the poultry, swine, and beef industries, under your bill, is there anything preventing them from continuing to be part of it?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Frederick. So your question was, is there anybody who's currently on that would prevent them? Is that? I don't know where they live. You know, generally when there's a transfer of authority, you let people serve out their term rather than stopping it. So there's a grandfathering, for lack of a better term, in. If we need to clarify that, I think people who are appointed should serve out their term and then it be replaced, you know, whoever they are. But that's my, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To phrase the question in a different way, is there anything in your language that's preventing a representative, even if it's not the same one, from each of those industries from continuing to serve on the board?
Representative Hansen.
No, because they could be appointed, there could be representatives in each congressional district.
Okay. So we'll move on to a roll call being requested. And so Matthew Salzer.
Chair Vang.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Cha.
No.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Sensor-Murra.
No.
Representative Tabke.
No.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Jacob.
Jacob, yes.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
I think you missed.
Did I miss? Oh, Representative Ream, sorry.
Ream, no.
There being 8 no's and 5 ayes, the motion does not prevail. We'll move on to testimony. Due to limited time, we will, like, please keep your testimony to a minute. And the first one is Dr. Trevor Ames from the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association. If you can please make your way to the testifying table. A remote. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed. If you're speaking, you are muted.
I'm on the Zoom. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Please identify yourself.
Okay. Representative Chair Vang and committee members, I'm Trevor Ames, a veterinarian representing the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association.
Please begin your testimony and please keep it concise.
Representative Chair Vang and committee members, I'm Trevor Ray, the veterinarian representing.
Dr. Trevor, I think you need to turn off.
Prior to.
Please begin your testimony and please keep it concise.
Prior to volunteering with the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association.
Dr. Trevor, I think you need to turn off your speakers.
Dr. Trevor, I think you need to turn off.
think I've corrected it. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Prior to volunteering with the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association and their government affairs efforts, I worked at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine for 44 years, including 12 years as the dean. I retired from the University of Minnesota last June. The MVMA, the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association, is opposed to this bill in its current form. The MVMA believes that the Board of Animal Health has done an outstanding job of serving the animals in the state since its formation over 100 years ago. At that time, the Board of Animal Health was established as an independent state entity whose mission was to protect the health of the state's domestic animals through education and cooperation with veterinarians, producers, owners, and communities. The MVMA opposes the bill as written for three reasons. First, the bill changes the requirements for members of the Board of Animal Health so that experience in health and welfare of domestic animals is no longer necessary for appointment to the Board of Animal Health. Historically, the Board of Animal Health members were livestock producers or veterinarians that represented agricultural animals as well as horses and companion animals. In my role as the College of Veterinary Medicine Dean, I regularly attended the Board of Animal Health meetings to provide reports to the board from the college and also from the Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, which is the official state laboratory of the Board of Animal Health. I can speak from personal experience that the expertise of the Board of Animal Health members was vital in the board's decision-making on dealing with emerging and existing threats to animal health. The MVMA believes the requirement for experienced animal caretakers and veterinarians as members of the Board of Animal Health should remain, and consideration for expertise spanning agricultural animals, horses, and companion animals should be considered.
Second, Dr. Trevor, if you can please finish your thought.
The bill also proposes that board members be appointed by the governor without consultation with the Senate. The MVMA opposes this change because this would remove an important check and balance currently in place regarding the constitution of the Board of Animal Health. And finally, the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association also opposes the change proposed in the bill that would have the Board of Animal Health Executive Director being appointed yearly by the governor, as opposed to its current mechanism where the members of the Board of Animal Health appoint the Executive Director. In my opening remarks, I stated that the Board of Animal Health was created as an independent government entity, and that was by design. The board has been guided by science and sound decision-making by experienced animal professionals independent of political influence. This has allowed the state of Minnesota to be more successful and more timely than other states in eliminating diseases like pseudorabies in our swine and tuberculosis in our cattle. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak for the Minnesota Veterinary Medical Association and the approximately 3,500 veterinarians that it represents.
Thank you, Dr. Trevor. I think you can turn on your speakers now. Next we have is Tony Qualas, Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and try to keep it under a minute. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony Qualas, and I'm representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association, and I will try and save you a little bit of time because Representative Hansen has also touched on a little bit of what my concerns are, Madam Chair, and that is the removal of the livestock producers along with the two experienced veterinarians. As referenced by the testimony just in front of me, we're very concerned about removing the experience and the expertise that would come to that board by removing them, especially now where we've seen a number of emerging animal diseases. We've referenced animal avian bird flu as well as African swine, Madam Chair, so that is of concern. Also that's been touched on is the putting on the checks and balances by making the governor appoint the veterinarian, and also the removal of the advice and consent of the Senate, Madam Chair, is also of concern. I think there is a legitimate conversation to have around the board's composition. And in the 2008 evaluation report by the Office of Legislative Auditor, one of the things they mentioned was adding a member of the public to the board, Madam Chair, and I think that is a legitimate conversation to have. But I think that the composition that Representative Hansen has put forth has some concerns. There is also a letter in your packet detailing the Elk British concerns, Madam Chair. Thank you for the time and the opportunity.
Thank you, Tony. Next, we have Lucas Selstrom, Executive Director from Minnesota Milk. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and try to keep it under a minute.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Looks like I'm on the screen, but we can't hear anything on Zoom. I think I'm the last testifier, so if that's okay, I'll be brief. Thank you, Chair Vang, members of the committee. Minnesota Milk speaks against House File 911 today due to the logistical and trust breakdown it can provide to our state and our nation's food supply. The Minnesota Board of Animal Health would be made more political with governor's appointment of a state veterinarian. We'd prefer the current language, which includes the board that hires the veterinarian and these governor's appointments being made with advice and consent of the Senate. On the membership, we have two congressional districts where the vast majority of animal operations exist today due to where our human population lives and the economics of our state land base. Reorganizing the board as called for in this bill proportionally disenfranchises farmers from having input on to the state's decisions on the well-being of themselves and their animals. In summary, we, Minnesota Milk, the Dairy Farmers of Minnesota, ask you to oppose this bill. We believe it threatens the state of Minnesota's farm viability and animal health. I invite you to attend the next Board of Animal Health meeting, which are open to the public and are publicly posted. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. Next, we have Bruce Cleven from the Minnesota Turkey Growers Association. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Bruce Cleven. I represent Minnesota State Cattlemen, Minnesota Turkey Growers, and the North Central Poultry, which is formerly Chicken and Egg. I'm going to come in at a little different angle and try to do this in a minute, and that is to talk about the sweeping powers this board has. You don't have this in front of you, but if you move up to 35.05, this board has authority to quarantine or kill any domestic animal. This board has the authority to regulate movement in between states. This board, when the governor declares an emergency, the board can commandeer the University of Minnesota labs, and they can make them cooperate. All that happens to ensure the domestic supply or the domestic health of the animals. There's also quarantine authority, and this was put in 2001. And there was a big fight over this, about movement of livestock and, in particular, people. If you jump ahead to now I'm on 35.0661, subdivision 2, quarantine zones can be established. The restriction on movement can apply to persons, machinery, and personal property, and the order can be up to 72 hours. So when you have producers and vets, they know what they're doing. When you go to the 5th Congressional, 4th Congressional, two members of the public, you're going to be giving them this authority. And so we just don't think this is something you should monkey around with. If you do, think carefully about it for those reasons. This isn't like the LCMR where they're doling out money to their friends. There's quarantine authority here. There's civil penalties, and there's subpoena authority on this board.
Point of order, Madam Chair. Actually, that was uncalled for.
I didn't mean to any disparagement. I meant different boards, Lassard, Sams, LCMR, because Representative Hansen deals with that in the environment. So it was not.
Holding money out to your friends is unacceptable, and I would ask for a ruling.
Bruce Cleven, if you could keep your remarks just to the bill that we are testifying on.
I would retract that statement. It was meant to about to the boards that Representative Hansen uses in environment. I would retract the statement.
All right, thank you for your testimony. Stu Laurie from Minnesota Farmers Union.
Thank you, Chair Vang and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie. I'm the Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll work to be very brief because I think a lot of this is covered, but we have concerns about the bill as it's written, and I'll echo what Chair Hansen correctly identified, is that removing the requirement that these are livestock producers on the board and licensed veterinarians, and making the executive director a governor appointee are furious that that makes the board's decisions more political, less accountable to producers. To echo what Mr. Clavin said regarding the statute, I mean, our members care about this because this board makes really devastating decisions for them. This is the board that tells you you need to kill your livestock because there is a disease that's moving too quickly and we need to control that for your neighbors. And so, you know, in order to have confidence in that, we feel it's important to have that representation. I certainly don't want to imply that we're not open to changes, increasing the members in the name of geographic diversity, achieving equitable gender representation, ensuring expertise on the board related to companion animal health. Diseases don't discriminate between large animals and small animals. All those things make sense. I appreciate the conversations that we've had so far and the fact that the bill is being laid over, and really appreciate your time to share this. So thank you, Chair Hansen, and thank you, Chair Vang.
All right. Thank you, Sue. Next we have is Andrew Durr, Minnesota Pork Producers. If you can identify yourself and keep your remarks concise.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrew Durr, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. I can keep my remarks concise because I just be repeating what's been said quite a few times. First, I want to acknowledge, I've talked to Representative Hansen numerous times about this issue, and so we appreciate the accessibility and the continued work on this to address some of our concerns. But our concerns remain on this bill, and that's what's been said many times before. Removing the requirements to have a producer or a licensed veterinarian is concerning to our industry. And as has been said a couple times in committee, that the board did a good job addressing bovine TB and high-path AI. For the pork industry, I'd like to add the crisis that we saw with the supply chain disruptions during the COVID pandemic. And it was crucial for our industry that expertise was on that board, as they with the Department of Agriculture were on the front lines to get through that crisis as best as we could. And of course, as what's been mentioned, and Madam Chair, you had a great hearing, yet sobering hearing on ASF. Previously, that's what keeps my members up at night, and there's some comfort to know that that organizations like the Board of Animal Health and Department of Agriculture are preparing for that. Hopefully, we never have to see a response in action, but if it is, that we have the right people in place to respond to that. With that, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Andrew Durr. Next, we have is Pierce Bennett, Director of Public Policy, Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. If you can identify yourself and keep your remarks concise. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. My name is Pierce Bennett, Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Farm Bureau. I testify today in opposition to HS 911. As we have heard previously from other testifiers, we share concerns with changing the board, taking away producers and veterinary professionals, or at least lessening those requirements for members of the board. We also share concerns with changing the appointment of state veterinarian to a gubernatorial appointment or a governor's appointment. We share that concern for reasons that have already been laid out. We do not want this to be a political situation. We trust and value, and our farmers rely on, the work that this board does. It is critical. It is important. And without it, the animal industries in Minnesota will have difficulty to continue to being as successful and as strong well into the future. And so we are thankful for the board's work. We believe that it is working. We believe that it has been a successful and inclusive board. And we just wish to see that work continue without any changes or disruptions. So thank you again.
Thank you, Pierce. Discussion to the bill. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Representative Hansen, I have...
Sorry, Representative Harder. I just wanted to make note that due to limited time, I'll give 5 minutes for discussion, so if you can keep your questions, remarks brief,
right,
and then we can move on to the next bill. Right. Representative Harder.
My remarks will be short. I have a few issues of concern just to share with you. The first one has to do that you're removing the advice and consent of the Senate. This is giving the governor way too much power. And during COVID, we all know what happened to a lot of people when the governor was given unlimited power. We need to have checks and balances on that. The other thing is that when you change the makeup of people that have knowledge of the industry, I just question as to whether this board is going to turn into activists. And generally, many activists don't do well for people that are in agriculture. I have a concern about that. The other thing that I take a little bit of issue is this line where it talks about you need to achieve gender balance. So if the three of us here apply to be on the board and the two on my side have more knowledge, they're the ones that should be on the board versus me because I'm a girl. That's just the comments I had. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hansen, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that representation matters, and having a diverse board provides better representation. In regard to the testimony and the question, I would ask members to look at lines 1.13 through 1.16. And I'll read it. Members must be knowledgeable in animal agriculture, animal health, or pets and companion animals, with at least two members to represent the public and are not employed by agriculture, veterinary medicine, the pet industry, or related field. So two out of 10. 11, 2 out of 11. Representing the public. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick, too. Just going back to Representative Hansen's quote here, maybe just a brief definition for me of what knowledgeable means. It's really a broad term. I mean, does that mean I have a cat, or does that mean I know what how to raise an animal? I mean, I don't exactly know what you mean by knowledgeable.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Burkle, you know, knowledge doesn't have to be a degree. It can be experience. You know, that when you have an application that goes to open appointments, you have to demonstrate your knowledge. You know, so you're going to have to say what is applicable, and the appointing authority will look at that experience. If it owning a cat or owning a donkey or an elephant, I guess, would be the other potential, you know, may not meet that threshold.
I'll give the
just quick
Representative Burkle.
So I'd agree you don't need a degree because I don't have a degree, but I'm a fourth generation producer. So there's value in that. And I think what we're missing when we get off the rails with, you know, just defining as knowledgeable is we lose that experience. I think that's what we're talking about here. I think my amendment, and that's why I'm a little disappointed that it, and maybe we can have that conversation since we're laying it over. I won't take much more time. But the activity of the producer really matters here and what they deal with on the farm. And as some of our testifiers mentioned, when the power that the board has in quarantining and disposing of animals on a farm, it's just really important that the folks involved really understand animal agriculture.
I'll give the final question to Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick comment. I think we've heard loud and clear from seven testifiers that there is no appetite for this change. It is not being asked for by those that utilize the Board of Animal Health. And again, I am not supportive of this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen, closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll go back to the phrase that I started. Regulatory capture is when an agency or an entity that is created to regulate is captured by those that it regulates and does that work. I think it's important to have knowledge. I think it's important to have a diversity of knowledge and backgrounds in boards that represent all of the state. Why not have somebody who maybe is legal counsel? Why not have somebody who's maybe done logistics? Why not have somebody with a law enforcement background or a military background that may have dealt with emergencies? Those are things that they may not be a livestock producer, but their voice could be at the board. There may be small farms or maybe large farms. But often as we sit here in this committee, we hear, and I've been on it since 2005, it's usually don't change anything. And as the world changes, we need to keep up with it. I don't think these are significant changes, and they will help an outcome of making our state better. I think it will help agriculture. I think it will help companion animals. I think it is a reasoned and rational response. I'd ask for your support. I renew my motion that 9/11 be laid over for possible inclusion.
House File 9/11 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next bill we have is 1202, Representative Becker-Finn. on farm survey requirements. Representative Becker Finn, welcome to the committee. Since you are not on the committee, I will move that House File 1202 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. I see that you have an amendment, so we'll start with your amendment, and then you can do the bill presentation. So we have the A8 amendment. I move the A8 amendment. Representative Becker Finn, tell us about your amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to be here in your committee talking about what we can do about chronic wasting disease today. The A8 amendment deletes Section 5. I know there was some consternation about that section, and we decided it would make the bill better if we took that section out. So we're deleting that section, and then there's a line about the DNR potentially contracting with the Board of Animal Health. After speaking with Board of Animal Health, they asked that I remove that line because that's just not a thing that they do. So removing that line at their request as well.
All right. Discussion to the A8 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. The ayes have it and the motion prevails. The amendment A8 is adopted. To the bill as amended, Representative Becker Finn, please tell us about your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Vang. As many of you, but not all of you know, we've been trying to do more about chronic wasting disease for a very long time. The idea with this bill is that we can kind of take a more comprehensive approach and do everything in one bill instead of moving various different bills in lots of different places. And so this is bringing together some ideas that have come forward over the last, at least the whole time I've been in office since, this is year 7, I've been working on this issue. I did not run for office to be the CWD person, but here we are. And so this pulls together area, you know, that's why we have several stops with this bill. It pulls together several different things. To go through really quickly, Section 1 has to do with premises location data, so the public is aware of where these facilities are. Section 2 has to do with when there is a running at large prohibited, so when you've got a deer or cervidae who escapes and a hunter, and we have known incidents where this has happened where a hunter has then shot the deer because a white-tailed deer looks like a white-tailed deer, and we've had hunters who fully licensed, doing everything they're supposed to be doing, who have accidentally, you know, unknowingly shot a deer and then realized when they go up to the animal that, oh my God, there's an ear tag. And in the past, we've had some issues around then the farm owner of that deer then wanting the deer back, even though it was legally taken by the hunter. So that this addresses some of those issues. I understand Representative Nelson has an amendment that we'll get to that I'm supportive of on that issue. Section 3 has to do with fencing. I was listening earlier. I know you talked about fencing earlier, but so there's a couple different things in here that require different fencing requirements. Again, we took out Section 5, which was the ear tagging section. Section 6 is essentially the moratorium on new licenses for these kinds of operations. And then we've got some movement restrictions and changes in here in the next section. And then we also added in Section 8 is a liability section. You know, we've got some scenarios, for example, with the farm owner up north who dumped CWD carcasses on public land, and we as taxpayers had to pay for everything afterwards to take care of that. So we're putting in some liability sections. That's why you're sending it to my committee and judiciary next. Section 9 has to do with bringing in different deer or cervidae as well as semen. Section 10 is on federal funds that may come in and how that can be used. And then Section 11 is consultation required. So essentially just telling the Board of Animal Health and the DNR that they should be working with the U of M and the good research they're doing there as they're making decisions. Section 12 is a notice requirement. So if there is farm surveyed that tests positive for CWD, you would have to immediately notify the local governments, including tribal governments. Section 13 has to do with testing of animals. And Section 14 is transferring specifically white-tailed deer to the authority of the DNR. We have tried joint authority, and it just isn't working. It's really difficult to have two different entities who trying to make decisions. So we're moving that into the DNR's wheelhouse. And then Section 15 is some funding for the U of M to continue to do their research, which we're seeing really great things with what they've been able to learn even just in the last couple of years. So that is the bill. I know that's a lot. I know we're a little behind where we were supposed to be on the schedule, but I'll just say there are more than 500,000 deer hunters in our state. I am one of them. Many of you are, to my knowledge, I know some of you are, and every single one of us has deer hunters who live in their district. So this is not just a rural issue, not just an urban issue, not just a suburban issue. There are deer hunters who live in every single county of the state. Many of those families who are deer hunters, their families consume the venison, and that is really an important part of this. For me, deer hunting is integral to who we are as Minnesotans. Our tradition is of deer hunting is really strong, and folks may not know on the Ag Committee, but we actually have in our Minnesota state constitution, we have a constitutional right to hunt and fish in our state. So hunting and fishing and the taking of game and fish are a valued part of our heritage and shall be forever preserved for the people and shall be managed by law and regulation for the public good. So that's in our state constitution, and that really is where I am grounded in this work, as well as for folks who were lucky enough to get some of the testimony and the Environment Committee from Chair Dupuy from the Fond du Lac Nation. You know, we as Anishinaabe people, this is our way of life. The way that we interact with our natural world and the way that we have access to being able to use venison and eat, you know, that I always tell people my primary source of protein for my family is venison. And so the idea that deer who are infected with CWD because of the things we're not taking care of as a state would not be safe for my family to eat, That's really the biggest fear as we are doing this work for future generations and making sure that we're protecting those things. So I know we're in the Ag Committee, but I think the overlap there where we've got the same species on both sides of the fence and a disease that can easily be transmitted back and forth, that's really where we're at. So I was always taught to take care of the animals and they will take care of us. And so that is really what grounds me in this work. And I don't know if you want to take up most of the amendments, I think are helpful, and happy to continue discussion to make the bill better.
We have a couple of amendments, so we'll start with the A4. Representative Nelson, would you please move your amendment?
Yes, I will. Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A4 amendment, and it, as Representative Becker-Finn had stated, you know, if a hunter were to harvest an escaped deer, cervidae, that it would, you know, there's several steps that they have to do, and one of them is testing. But, you know, if you're, and I probably most areas already have, you know, some areas I know already require testing, maybe on the opening weekend of deer, just surveillance. But if you don't know what to do, you know, you've harvested deer and find out it has a tag in it, well, what do you do? Well, this gives a little bit of direction. It would just, that they would immediately notify the Commissioner of Natural Resources. I think part of it, there needs to be probably an investigation going on. Why is this deer out of the fence? And then I think also of just, I think there's also a potential of reducing conflict between a hunter and the animal owner. You know, if the hunter contacts the owner, you could have an immediate conflict and escalate things where they don't need to be. So I've spoken to the chair, and I believe it's an agreeable amendment, and I thank you for that, and I would encourage its adoption.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Yep, that's accurate. We had a good conversation, and I support the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The ayes have it, and the A4 amendment is adopted, or prevails, is adopted. We have the A5 amendment, which was posted. Representative Nelson, I believe you want to withdraw it.
I'm going to withdraw that. It was similar language, but I think we've got it clarified between the author and also the commissioner of the DNR. So, thank you.
All right. The A5 amendment is withdrawn. The next amendment we have is the A6. Representative Burkle, if you could please move your amendment.
I will move the A6 amendment. And I did have a conversation with Representative Becker Finn on the floor just a little bit about this possible voluntary white-tailed deer buyout program. It was actually proposed last year. It was a bill that Representative Heitzman offered or dropped, actually. It never got heard. But we've had a lot of discussion about the dangers of CWD and the danger to our hunters. You mentioned 500,000 hunters in the state. I know the letter that was submitted in your packet, and we haven't referred to it yet, but if you have it, take a look. We got the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association referencing a buyout as well and in support of it. I'd like to think that if we're going to do the right thing here for these deer farmers who are kind of caught in the middle of this thing and for our deer hunters, that we look seriously at a volunteer buyout program. So that's really the amendment. There's not much more to it. Appropriates $10.6 million in 24 and a half a million in 25. And that's really the guts of the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Becker Finn.
I thank you, and so I would oppose the amendment. I think it's premature at this point to be talking about, especially exactly what that number is. I think also the fact that this amendment is voluntary, it probably means we have no way of knowing if the ones that are the highest risk vectors are the ones that we're buying out. So I'm. You know, if we were ever to get to a point where we were talking about a buyout, I think we would want to just be done with farming white-tailed deer. They're a wild species. If we could have gone back in time, we probably never should have started farming them. I will also say I think the other problem that you'd run into is with valuation. Some of these operations, for folks who don't know, they're essentially genetically modified bucks that are given feed and hormones and different things to make their antlers grow to kind of ridiculously, you know, sort of abnormal proportions. And there are people out there who will pay tens of thousands of dollars to shoot essentially these mutant animals with abnormal racks. I don't call it hunting because it isn't legally hunting. You don't actually need a license because you're killing a domesticated animal within a fence. But it's people pay a lot of money for this. And so I think there's still a lot of questions about the valuation and how we would even figure that out. So would recommend a no vote on the amendment.
Members, I just want to encourage you all to keep your remarks concise. We do have testifiers here today that I want to make sure we give them time to testify. So Representative Burkle.
I'll be quick, Madam Chair. Thank you. The number came about from, you know, we looked at the number of deer on the ground now. The USDA indemnification number is up to $3,000. That's really where the number came from. As far as the voluntary part, you know, there's just a lot of hobby farmers that are caught in the middle of this thing. And, you know, I really think if we're honest about eradicating CWD, we have to have an honest conversation about some kind of a buyout program. That's all, Madam Chair.
All right.
I would appreciate a yes vote, and I'd like a roll call if possible, please.
All right. Representative Nelson, did you have something to say?
Yes, thank you. And you know, whether it's this amendment or something else, I do support a buyout. I think you know, many of the farms had gotten into this. Maybe they were a family farm, and they transitioned into this as an opportunity. They had to make money at the point. And unfortunately, through many of them, no fault of their own, this has become an issue. And unfortunately, they maybe painted themselves in a corner, and I think we, whether it's this amendment or something else, I think the buyout is something that we need to be looking at for the public good. I think of what do we do with the property once, if it is CWD infected. I think that there's a long-term cost to the public. What if the bank is owning these properties forever? I think it becomes an issue, and Whether it's this one or another time, I think we do need to be having a serious discussion on this. So thank you.
All right. All those in favor of the motions? Oh, there was a roll call being requested?
Yeah.
All right. We'll start with roll call. Matthew Seltzer.
Chair Vang?
No.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Anderson, aye.
Representative Cha?
No.
Representative Frederick?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Ream?
No.
Representative Santomura?
No.
Representative Tadke?
No.
Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Jacob?
Jacob, aye.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
There being 8 no's and 5 yes, the nays have it, and the motion does not prevail. We have the A7 amendment. Representative Burkle, I believe that's your amendment again. Please move your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll move the A7 amendment. Really, simply, if you go to section, is it 4 of the bill on fencing? I forgot. Yeah. No, sorry. Yeah, I just want clarification. Really, the amendment really clarifies on the double fencing that producers would have the opportunity to use the Agri-Livestock Program to put those fences up. And really, that's it for the bill. I'll be short. But they are eligible for that under the program now. I just want clarification that they could be eligible still.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you. We didn't talk about this one, but I'm supportive. I think it's a reasonable amendment, and again, happy to make the bill better.
All right. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The ayes have it, and the motion prevails. I believe that is all our amendments. We'll move on to testimony. Once again, due to limited time. We'll please keep your remarks under a minute. The first one is Brad Galsman, Executive Director, Minnesota Conservation Federation. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you to the chair and members of the committee. My name is Brad Galsman. I'm Executive Director with the Minnesota Conservation Federation. I'll edit my comments on the fly here, so excuse me. This afternoon, I am testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Conservation Federation and members of the CWD Action Coalition. I did submit a document with my testimony that lists the members of our broad coalition, and I would encourage you to take a look at that document. The spread of CWD in Minnesota is real, and its impacts are being felt by deer hunters across the state. Mandatory testing is already a reality for many deer hunters, depending on where you hunt, especially on opening of firearms. And although it's primarily down in the southeast portion of the state, areas near Bemidji, Brainerd, and Grand Rapids have also been affected by the spread. Captive cervid farming represents a primary vector for CWD to travel across our state and infect captive deer inside a fence and wild deer outside of a facility's property. Excuse me. In 2021, the DNR and Board of Animal Health issued a report detailing their concurrent authority over the regulation of farmed white-tailed deer. In part, the report detailed some of what was found during joint inspection of captive cervid facilities. And the report reads, from the end of August to December 2021, DNR and Board of Animal Health inspectors jointly inspected 50 registered cervidae farms and identified 17 compliance infractions, including 10 farms with inadequate fencing, 2 farms with inadequate redundant gating, 2 herd owners' failure to submit death reports within the required timeline, 1 herd owner's failure to submit samples for CWD testing, 1 farm where inspectors could not visualize official ID, and 1 farm with official identification missing. During the inspections, DNR staff evaluated the potential for farmed and wild deer to interact near fence lines, since this is a potential risk for the spread of CWD. The DNR found good deer cover or habitat at the fence line on 35 of 50 farms, close or direct contact potential between farmed and wild deer on 22 of the farms. Evidence included feces, rubs and scrapes, tracks, and wild deer sightings in the vicinity of the fence.
Mr. Galsman, if you can finish your thought.
Yep, absolutely. The report indicated that the deer had the ability to commingle. HF 1202 represents legislation that will create a stronger regulatory environment for these farms. Our coalition sees the potential, the regulation of the industry is modernizing servant farming in Minnesota. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We have next Tony Kolas and Eric Simonson. Tony's from Minnesota Elk Breeders. If you can identify yourself again for the committee. And if Eric, if you could also make your way to the testifying table.
Yep. Madam Chair, Tony Quillis again for the record, representing Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. And there are a number of concerns with this bill, and I will try and get to them within a minute. First one starts in Section 1, Madam Chair, where every other entity that reports and has to be regulated by the Board of Animal Health, including cattle and turkey, has their data private. And this would make it public. And it is very concerning that that data would be public, especially for the families and children of those farmers, Madam Chair. I'd like to also touch on Section 3, where it talks about fencing. We need some clarification there where it talks about physical contact and what that would actually look like. Would it be shade cloth, electric fencing? We've been working with, as referenced earlier, the University of Minnesota, specifically Dr. Scott Wells, on some biosecurity, and no other state requires this contact, Madam Chair. And you're going to see, unfortunately for us, in the next 24 to 48 hours, why we think removing the determination and reasonable time for the Board of Animal Health to repair a fence. If we get what we've got going to come down today, it's going to be hard to get in to repair a fence. We can secure the animals and make sure that they're okay, but getting a chance to repair that fence might be a tough due to natural resources. It talks about fencing and after being detected for chronic wasting disease, holding that fence up and not raising farmed on the farm for up to 10 years is going to be the change. The federal rule right now enforced by the USDA is 5 years, Madam Chair. So I just wanted to point that out. Representative Becker Finn referenced the liability section, and I agree with her that anybody that has unlawful disposal should be prosecuted. But this also includes the sale of animals. And the incubation period on elk is 3 years. There's a chance that you're going to be able to sell an elk and have no control over it whatsoever. So I requested and talked about inserting language that would say at least known to be infected by. And Madam Chair, I think the artificial insemination section would help decrease movement of animals, and I think it would be tough to enforce and regulate. Madam Chair, thank you for the ability to comment on House File 1202.
Thank you. Eric Simonson, if you can identify before the committee, and please keep it concise.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Simonson. I'm a lobbyist that represents the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. In the interest of time, I won't repeat everything that's been said, but we want to express our gratitude to Representative Becker Finn for bringing forward House File 1202, and we want to express our support of the bill as amended to members of this committee. I don't have to tell any of you about the impact CWD has had and seems to continue to have on the wild deer habitat in Minnesota, and we believe very strongly, in fact, it's been a long-standing legislative priority of our association to advocate for double fencing and better enforcement on servant farms. Thank you, Representative Becker Finn, Chair Vang, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1202 as amended. Thank you.
We have Tim Spreck and Scott Fire from the Minnesota Deer Farmers. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Tim Spreck, and I'm here today representing the interests of the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. Madam Chair, I would love to have the opportunity to go through this bill line by line because there are a lot of very concerning and industry-ending provisions in this bill,
but in the interest of time. Members should have already read the bill, so we don't need to go through line by line, but please make your remarks on where you think please keep it
that concise. Was not my intention, Madam Chair. I would like to have the opportunity, but I'm not going to do that today. So if any members would like to meet with me or meet with Deer Farmers, we're open at any time. The concern we have with 1202 is that it really brings an end to deer farming in four significant ways: by increasing costs, by decreasing revenue, by increasing regulations, and by phasing it out over time. I do want to thank Representative Chair Becker Finn for accepting a couple of amendments that make a little less heartburn. And in the spirit of cooperation, I will make myself available to her at any time she would like to have additional discussions. And at this point, I'd like to stand aside and let the folks that drove a lengthy amount of time to get here today have the opportunity to testify. Thank you.
Scott Fire, please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Scott Fear. I represent the Minnesota deer farming industry as the president. And on behalf of our association, I want to acknowledge how devastating House Floor 1202 would be to our business. It put virtually all of us out of business, bankruptcy. You know, this is how we provide for our families. This is how we put food on our tables. This is how we put our kids through college. I also want to acknowledge all the revenue that we provide for our local businesses and our communities. Also wanted to point out that I think there's a lot of misinformation and maybe at times even some disinformation on CWD. When I run the numbers on the Board of Animal Health data and even the DNR data, over the last 7 years, we're talking about an infectious rate of less than 0.5%. I agree CWD is real, but is this really about CWD? And there's not one person, not one group, not one association in this entire state that wants to solve CWD worse, or more, I should say, than the Minnesota Deer Farmers Association. So we would encourage you to work with us. And also, as far as feed, I guess there's a comment made about feed and hormones and genetically modified animals. We feed our animals just a very natural, it's a lot like a calf feed. There's no hormones. There's no modification in
President
any
Scott,
regard,
if you can finish your thought, please.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Dr. Scott Josephson, if you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Dr. Scott Josephson. I own and operate Tricon Veterinary Clinic in Taunton, Minnesota. I've been in business for 38 years. Running a general veterinary practice, and I serve reproductive work for 60-plus white-tailed deer farms throughout the Midwest, from here to Louisiana and Pennsylvania and back. I'm here to discuss the semen article in the bill that you're considering, and I'm trying to offer a path forward and a solution to this problem. The Board of Animal Health has very well presented the resistance that we found in these white-tailed deer, and both the 50K genomics and in the alleles that are found to be giving us resistance in these animals. I would say that the number one, when we breed these deer, the number one selection criteria that these farmers have is what are the resistance traits in those deer. So that's an important factor that these guys are using when they're trying to establish the breeding programs within their farm. The other thing that needs to be mentioned is that 70% of the wild deer, up to 80% of the wild deer in Minnesota, don't possess these resistant genes. They are almost exclusively the most highly susceptible animals genetically to the disease.
Dr. Scott, if you can please finish your thought.
I'll finish quickly. Semen that is used in these programs is from deer that are likely have been harvested. And most states require testing, CWD testing, on these deer when they're harvested or they die on the deer farm. So the semen that we're using likely has come from an animal that has been already tested for CWD and found to be negative, or it would not be used in the system. There's a scrapie model that can be used. The USDA has used that very effectively. In the last 20 years, scrapie, which is the same disease in sheep as in white-tailed deer, has been eradicated from the United States in 20 years.
Thank you, Dr.
So that's
Scott.
A very effective program that we need to use for a model. I urge you to use the scientific approach,
Dr. Scott,
using
thank
genetics
you so much.
To achieve the goal of eradicating CWD on these white-tailed deer farms.
Thank you. We are over committee time, but I'll allow for two questions for members if you have questions to the bill author. Representative Anderson.
Hey, Madam Chair, I would first ask if this bill could be held over. There's a lot of questions we could ask. It's very important to the ag situation.
Well, that'd be up to you. But my question to the bill author is, the live animal test, is that recognized by USDA, and would there be indemnification if an animal had to be put down because of that two-time test?
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, and thank you for the question. Not a gotcha. The USDA is behind in getting this test confirmed. I know I had a really good conversation actually with the folks at Board of Animal Health yesterday about things we can all be doing to put pressure on the feds to get this test verified as far as they're concerned. It's verified as far as many scientists believe. What would happen, and one a discussion point that I had with the board was about doing some kind of voluntary program. And so we recognize that RT-QUIC is not recognized by the USDA in their indemnification program, but you could follow up that testing. So, for instance, if you were positive for CWD under RT-QUIC, you could then do the additional testing and have the results that you would need to be indemnified.
Representative Cha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, annually, how much does the Board of Animal Health and the DNR spend on policing or managing the CWD problem? Do we have somebody here to answer?
Representative Beckerfin?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. Again, there's like all these different things that are happening in different spaces on that front. But I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to that off the top of my head.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really just have a comment. I think it's poor for us to be moving this bill this quickly. It's obvious we have a lot of questions. Dr. Josephson had some really interesting testimony in environment based on the alleles and genetics going forward. And just the fact that we've got farmers on the line here and their livelihoods, and we're rushing this through, it's irresponsible. And it makes me shudder to think of what we do to the rest of our ag industry if we treat it in the same way.
I would just add that this is not a new bill. We've heard these bills before. I think the new language was the live testing one. And so I believe, Representative Beckerfin, you would like to add on to that too as well?
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Burkle. You know, this isn't a new issue. Like I said, we've been working on this for 7 years. As to the genetics piece, I think the idea that we would somehow want to mess with the wild herd by somehow putting genetics that I just don't think that's a path that we want to go to with messing with a wild animal. I understand folks may have questions about that, but that's sort of, I think that's a bad policy choice for us to be messing with the genetics of wild animals.
All right, Representative Anderson.
Ma'am, I would motion to table this bill. It was mentioned that this bill's been around for 7 years, but looking around, there's a lot of freshmen on this committee who haven't heard this bill at all. I move to table the bill and ask for a roll call.
A roll call being requested. Motion to table. Is there a discussion? There's no discussion. Since it's a tabling motion, there's no need for discussion. Roll call. Matthew Saucer.
Chair Vang.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Cha.
No.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Ream.
No.
Representative Sensormura.
No.
Representative Tadke.
No.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Representative Harder.
Aye.
Representative Jacob.
Jacob, aye.
Representative Nelson.
Aye.
There being 8 no's and 5 ayes, the no's have it. The motion is not adopted. Just to the bill, seeing none, I will renew my motion to recommend House File 1202 as amended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Is that Representative Beckerfin?
Thank you, Chair. If I could just have a closing
closing
comment.
Please keep it short.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say for the record, this is about CWD. There is no conspiracy as we talk about the safety of people's families and their children. Myself and other members of this committee have experienced threats because of our work about this. So I think it's important that we dispel any of that misinformation and disinformation that is happening. This is about public policy. At the end of the day, we are legally, constitutionally required to weigh the need to protect deer as a wild game species above the desire to support a commercial interest. We're not out to get anybody. We're trying to do right by the people of our state. Thank you for your support, Madam Chair.
All right. I renew my motion to recommend House File 1202 as amended be deferred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no.
No.
The ayes have it. The motion prevails. House File 1202 as amended is recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Thank you, members, for staying over time, and this meeting is adjourned.